Hello and welcome to MedPod, the official CPD podcast for Maiden Early Trust staff by Maiden Early Trust staff. In each episode, we are joined by a member of Trust staff to share their area of expertise, interest or research in the hope that it will inspire our listeners to try out something new in their own practice. I'm Chloe Bateman, a history teacher at Maiden Early School, and I will be your host today. The age-old question of how we can improve our own practice within our roles is an inherent element of professional learning and one which really does sit at the heart of MedPod itself. With a plethora of strategies, techniques, blogs, books and podcasts seeking to answer this question, it can be easy to feel overwhelmed and unsure of which route will be most effective. Ultimately, I think we're all seeking a method which has a strong evidence base, a clear process to follow, one which is sustainable in terms of our own workload and others' workload, and which is proven to have a positive impact on student outcomes and the furthering of our own professional practice. With this in mind, I am really delighted to welcome Isabel Pravda, the Head of Drama at Maiden Early School, to MedPod to discuss the process of instructional coaching, a method which has been shown to have a significant impact on student progress and teacher self-efficacy. Isabel, welcome. It would be really great if we could hear a little bit about your career journey so far, just to get us started.
Hi Chloe, thank you so much for having me on. I started in as an actor actually, and I trained as an actor, finished my A-levels, trained as an actor at the Central School of Speech and Drama in London, and then went on to act in London, and then later in my life I moved to Athens, acted, continued acting there, moved back to England, and then it decided it was time for changing career. During my time in London, I had worked in schools on and off as a TA and also as an unqualified teacher. So it seemed a natural step. And my mum was a teacher and my grandparents. So then I was very fortunate to find training on the job, which was assessment only route through Maiden Early Trust. And I have trained here and progressed to head of department, head of year. And now, sadly, I'll be leaving soon to become assistant head at Reading Girls. So it's been quite a journey.
Thank you, Isabel. Some very varied, interesting career there. So I know that over the last few years now, you've been looking at instructional coaching.
So I've been doing the Level 4 Coach Assessor for the National College for Education. It's an apprenticeship, and I've been doing that for 18 months. I finished a couple of weeks ago, and so I'm now qualified.
And you did very well, didn't you, on it?
I got a distinction. I'm so well done. Proud of it. I am so, so proud of it. Not least because I also had to do my ICT GCSE in order to get it,
oh, really?
Which was quite something for me. So double whammy. I am so chuffed, yeah.
Oh, well done. That's amazing. So I was wondering if we could start just by getting a bit of an overview of what instructional coaching is, because I know some of our listeners will be very familiar with this, but I think for others this may be something quite new.
Okay. So people may be familiar with coaching, which I know we're going to talk about in a bit. The difference between coaching and instructional coaching is that it's about helping people find their own answers, their own targets, their own methods. But instructional coaching allows the coach to move into the mentoring mode. So it traditional coaching that I did coaching in schools certificate when I first started teaching. And that was very much open questions. And there was no directive input. But this is on a coaching continuum where you can move from the more open questions. But when required or appropriate, you then go into the more directive approach. Okay. So it's got that continuum from non-directive to directive. The coach essentially takes somebody through the cycle and they are there to facilitate creation of own targets, own action plans, implementations, and then commitment. So many people will recognize that with standard coaching. I said the essential difference is that moment of going into the more directed approach.
Okay.
Giving advice.
With the open-ended questions, is that kind of the standard way of saying how did that go, or what, that sort of very wide-ranging question?
Yes. What you're aiming to do, and this is why the ECF is now using this method for training early qualified teachers, because I was also, I just recently sadly stopped being the lead ECT facilitator. So I was there for the first 2 years of running it. And the approach is very much based on this idea of instructional coaching, of supporting people to become their own teachers. You are there as a coach to facilitate somebody making their own professional development. And there is a strict structure in which to take them through that, so that you, when you say open questions, I always have the feeling of it's all a bit like going to a counselling session. You say, just give me some advice. This is all too airy-fairy. But there is a founded, researched method.
Yeah.
And you have a strict, structured way to take your coachee through it. And these questions are there to facilitate them finding their own answers. And there's a whole range of questions. In fact, Andy Buck, which is the basic coaching method that was the main method that we studied on the apprenticeship, has a whole range of specific questions for each section. And you can use those as prompts. But essentially, I thought one of the most helpful things I came across was turning the why into what. For example, you know, why hasn't this happened? What has stopped this from happening?
Okay.
So you really are breaking things down so that it's finding those solutions together. And I think that brings me to a second point, which is incredibly important for instructional coaching. It is non-judgmental. Mm. It is being on side. Someone likened it to being the manager of a football team. And you're there with your team working on action points with goals. And then when they're up on the football field, like a teacher being in the classroom and you're observing them, you are not judging them. You are there rooting for them. Mm. You are together wanting to win that game from the practice you put together. So you are facilitating them learning and developing, but also you are on their team.
Yeah.
And that is what gets the results.
Right. So it's that very kind of united front sort of relationship.
Non-judgmental, on-side relationship.
Okay.
And there is a sense of relationship. You do have to build that relationship of trust and competence. Believing, you have to believe that your coach knows what they're doing, feels secure, and has the competence in this area. Having said that, you do not have to be a specialist in the area that you're coaching in.
Right.
This is a model that's been used widely for many years in business, and professional coaches do not have to specialize in a specific business area. It would be prudent to read up on it and get some terms of context. They are not the specialist, however. The person being coached is the specialist in the area. They are the specialists in the sounding board and supporting finding solutions.
Okay. Right. That's really interesting, actually, that it doesn't have to be the specialist. It's more knowing that method and that approach to it that sits behind it.
Absolutely. Having the competence in that. Although, as I said, you would do your due diligence and you would... due diligence. It's the end of a 5-period day. And you would have the context and have the method to find out where you need to.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So how does this actually work in practice then? Could you sort of talk me through what it might look like as a discussion or sort of a
Absolutely.
Sense of that?
I'll take you through the Andy Buck basic method. There are various methods, but they are all fairly similar and of a similar approach. You start with the background. Actually, before that, you really start with contracting. So you're looking at explaining why you're doing it, what the practice will be, very similar to you'd have with a therapist. Mm-hmm. So you're establishing the safeguarding, record keeping. Then you have the background, which can be a longer session, which should really be a longer session. That is establishing that relationship that we talked of. The trust, key information. In that time, I would say it's also, if you have the opportunity, you gather as much information before the session on your coachee. So, for example, in the schooling context, I would liaise with the head of department, with if they were an ECT, their mentor, data that I can get my hands on. So I have a very good understanding of where they are at. And then you get more information through that background session. Through the background session, then it evolves into finding what the target is. And that really has to come from the coaching. And you only get that by truly listening. Mm. And that was quite a challenge for me. And I have to say is the biggest takeaway, really listening. It's incredible how much we all I believe, kind of try and guess what the other person's thinking, put ourselves into their shoes, and that blocks this process. You have to trust the process. An aim will emerge.
Okay.
And through your questioning, you will then support them to make it into a smart target. Once you have the smart target, then it's through more questioning, you develop the strategy. Then steps into implementation, what will be done, what are the next steps, and then gaining them the commitment. From that, in a very practical way, you set dates and times, and you set a date for the next session. So we know exactly what's going to be done by when. There are various ways of keeping track of this. I found a very simple method of a Google Doc that you share, yeah, if you're both in agreement. Not to be arduous, just to keep those very simple bullet points. And when you're going to meet again, pop that in your Outlook calendar. And that's all in the most simple, straightforward and personal of ways. That is how I have conducted my coaching sessions this year. When you go to a larger scale,
that's
when you have to look at how to implement it in schools. And there are challenges there. Because as I said before, it is widespread in business where there is more time. And time is one thing we do not have in schools. And this needs time. It's not to be there to be another tick box. Oh gosh, I've got to get that coaching session done. Because when done right, it's incredibly powerful.
Right. Does it involve observing the teacher as well at work and using that as part of the discussions, then feedback from that?
Absolutely. So that is the approach I just described is really a structure to follow.
Okay.
But within that, there are many different tools and strategies you could use. For example, one of the parts of the background could be doing an observation. Mm-hmm. Or taking an observation from the curriculum lead and using that to feed into the background and the target. As part of the strategy, it would be an excellent tool to go and see them in action. Once they have done the research or found the strategies, tried it out a couple of times, you set a date for an observation, and then we're back to this idea of being the manager on side at the football match. You are there seeing how those action points, strategies that you have recorded together, how they have played out on the pitch. And then you have the feedback session. Within the instructional coaching, there are various approaches to feedback. I follow the Andy Buck one predominantly. I found it to be very effective. It is very much about giving that specific praise and the open questions, leading them to identify what the strengths and challenges were in the observation. But with a specific focus to your targets, because what you've got to, this is not, I remember someone stuck in my mind, and this is not a cozy chat. This is about improving your practice. This is about having impact. What I think is so strong about it is it's bespoke. I was listening to a podcast the other day about intrinsic and extrinsic reward. And I think one of the key things saying that extrinsic rewards proved to not work, I mean, in this set of research. And I was breaking down, how do you get intrinsic rewards? How do you get that feeling of wanting to do something? And one of the key things is that buy-in. And we see it with our students and we know it with ourselves. So if the target comes from the coachee, that is key. Yeah. It's something they are interested in, something that they want to work on, and there's your intrinsic reward. So that is why the time needs to be given to that and why you must let them lead, and it is about their professional development.
Does it have a kind of defined end point to it, or is this something that if you were being coached, it would go on kind of indefinitely?
That's an excellent question, and I don't think there is a definite, definitive answer to that. I do see it very much in a similar vein as therapy, in the sense that as a professional and as a human, we never stop developing. Right. Sorry, some people may have very specific thoughts on therapy. So let's keep it very specific to the work practice. As a teacher, you never stop developing your practice. Therefore, it would be beneficial to have instructional coaching continually.
Yeah.
However, I also see that there would be a place to say we have a 6-week session and we've got a specific thing to work on. And I think if it were to be continual, then it is about really understanding a specific target for a time frame.
Yeah.
So to stop it being a cozy chat. So you've really, and that's where the coach comes in. Mm-hmm. They're facilitating this very structured and focused growth.
Mm.
So short answer is both. Could be appropriate and applied with this method.
Yeah, I guess depending on the particular context and like resources, I guess, available as well. I think one of the strengths that's kind of standing out to me from what you said is how structured the process is. So I was wondering if you could maybe share a couple more benefits in terms of both for those who are being coached, but also for the coach, because I imagine that the role of the coach is actually a very rewarding one also.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with the coaches. I think a huge number one is feeling valued and listened to. And I think I've seen specifically after COVID as a factor, when there's been so much focus on students and getting it back and getting up and running. And I sense an environment of us feeling a little bit run ragged and neglected. neglected in our personal journey, in the purpose of everything, without getting too philosophical. So I think right now is a fantastic time to use this for professional development, because it is very much about listening to people and valuing them and igniting their own passion and excitement, their own career and development, whether that be professional, career development or professional development. It's about where that person wants to go, what's going to spark their curiosity and excitement and engagement. It's bespoke, and there's a lot of kickback against kind of one-size-fits-all teaching for staff. We are so quick to look to differentiation with our students, and yet there is little to none differentiation often within professional development for a school, where you've got teachers at vastly different levels of ability, vastly different interests, and yet there is a lot of one size fits all. So this gives the opportunity for bespoke professional development. So I think that's fantastic advantage to the coachee.
Yeah.
For the coach, I can speak personally, made me much more aware of others, much more aware of my responsibility to others in terms of in a professional capacity. It has given me a much deeper understanding of how to build positive relationships and to effectively line manage.
Because I guess there are a lot of skills that are transferable out of that context into kind of standard line management scenarios also.
Hugely. I mean, instructional coaching, the methodology and approach, in its kind of very proper sense, is a session one-to-one, an hour, let's say, in the most conventional, but it's highly flexible. It could be a corridor conversation. Mm. It could be a 5-minute chat. It could be a group of 6 people with one coach. There are many variations on it. And the language and the structure, once you become, it kind of becomes second nature, will feed into all of these areas.
Yeah.
And it feeds into your teaching, because we're dealing with students, we're dealing with staff, we're dealing with humans.
I think that's a really kind of powerful pitch for it, really. I particularly like what you said there about it being that very bespoke kind of part of your professional development. I think as soon as you see somebody that kind of becomes aware of the fact that professional learning and development is very much a lifelong journey, actually, that just that awareness and having, structures along the way like this to facilitate that, I think it can be so transformative from someone seeing something as just a job to seeing it as a career that they actually want to put that effort and energy into, because it is a reflection of them as a person also. And that's kind of personal professional relationship, I think, is kind of coming into play a lot here with what you're saying.
And you see people flourish. You're creating the right environment for it, and you're nurturing that, and then they will flourish.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with that all in mind, I'm sure there'd be people listening thinking would quite like to get involved in this, either as someone who could be coached or as the coach themselves. I know that you are very sadly leaving the Trust shortly, but if people are interested in getting involved in this, what would you recommend that they do?
At Maiden Early Trust specifically? Yes. So there were a number of us that went up to do the apprenticeship. And that Rob Buck is the lead across the Trust, so he would be an excellent point of contact. And then you find, ask who your lead is in the specific school. I don't have them off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. I think it has changed at Maiden Early in Reading. Currently, Ben Garner and Alison Morgan are looking to lead at Maiden Early School. And Maiden Early Chilton Edge, Judy Hills was training, but she's on maternity. So again, ask who the lead is in the specific school. And Rob Buck with the best point of contact for that.
Well, thank you so much, Isabel, for such an inspiring and interesting insight into the world of instructional coaching. I think having heard you speak about this so passionately, there will certainly be people who are interested in getting involved in the work that is being done across the Trust on this. And thank you for signposting those points of contact for people as well. I hope that everyone has had a pleasant Easter holiday and looking forward to the term ahead. And we will see you in our next episode of MetPod coming soon.